is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Well, the prosecution rested its case against Mario Fernandez on day six of his murder trial in Jacksonville. 6 days of testimony, no murder weapon recovered, no testimony from the alleged gunman, Henry Tenen, no text message, no email, no phone call, no recorded conversation where Mario Fernandez asked anyone to kill Jared Breitigan. Can they land it? I don't know that they can. This is a case where seems like there's very likely involvement here. Don't really see a lot of ways around it, but beyond a reasonable doubt, I don't know if we reached the beyond point here. I'm being honest. I don't know. It's not a great thing when you're the prosecution. And this is day six where you're landing it. And keep in mind, the attorney for Shanna coming in at the end of this, Jose Baez, he's a good one. If he sees a clear path of no connection, well, there's a reason that he's the attorney in this case for Shanna when this comes up. But so far, so good, I guess, to a certain extent. I don't know. You tell me. Tell me, if you're watching this one, how do you think it's going so far for the prosecution and the defense? The defense moved immediately for acquittal. The charges, first-degree murder and solicitation to commit a capital felony, require evidence of a communicative act. An earnest request from Fernandez to Tenen to commit murder. Nobody witnessed one. Nothing in writing says what happened, and the original conspiracy charge, which would have given the prosecution a different legal path, was dropped back in July before the trial started. What's left is solicitation, a charge that lives or dies, and whether the jury believes one person asked another person to do something. Without that ask, there is no crime. I know. In reality, there's no way these dots connect without there being a crime, but it's, can you prove it? Judge London Kite denied the motion. The case goes to the jury possibly as early as Wednesday. We'll see what the defense brings. The question now is what 12 jurors do when every thread of evidence wraps around one man and none of them are the thread the charge actually requires. Tenen backing down and saying, I'm not going to be your star witness and testify against them, really, I think, threw a wrench in the prosecution's case. Prosecutors called John Biggerstaff to the stand, the man investigators believe once possessed the murder weapon. Biggerstaff is a convicted felon, a former Navy veteran, a longtime friend of Fernandez. He once owned a 10mm Glock, same type of firearm identified from shell casings, found at the scene where Breitigan was killed. Biggerstaff denied giving any firearm to Fernandez repeatedly under oath. His son Juan, a former law enforcement officer in Texas, took the stand after him and said the same thing. Juan never saw his father with a firearm after 2016 when John surrendered his weapons following his felony conviction. But both Biggerstaff came with baggage. The prosecution made sure the jury saw. Juan's own department had ordered him to wear a wire on his father. The 10mm came up in that recording. John told his son the gun would turn up after January 1st. Juan had also used the serial number of the 10mm while he reported two guns stolen from his vehicle in Texas at 23. The prosecutor pressed him on it. Based on your training and experience, are stolen guns and reporting them accurately important? Juan said yes. He admitted the report was inaccurate. Biggerstaff himself had changed his story about where the gun was. He deleted items from his phone before meeting with police, and he told his son something prosecutors made sure landed in the courtroom. The only thing they care about is the 10mm. The day before the murder, February 15th of 22, Fernandez was at Biggerstaff's house. Biggerstaff and his wife are swingers, and Fernandez allegedly did it with Biggerstaff's wife. that day at Biggerstaff's request. How nice. And the recording, apparently, of the encounter exists. Defense Attorney Jesse Dreischer asked the question directly, did you give Fernandez a firearm in exchange for sleeping with your wife? Biggerstaff said no. Prosecution's theory on the gun runs through circumstantial details. Fernandez visited Biggerstaff on January 25th, 3 weeks before the murder. That same day, Biggerstaff searched online for information about 10mm firearms. His stories about the weapon shifted, and he can't account for what or where it ended up. The defense's answer is simpler. There's no physical evidence Fernandez ever touched that gun. Detective Chris Johns admitted as much under cross-examination last week, but the prosecution had its own answer to the missing weapon. Johns testified that investigators received information in 2023 that the gun used to kill Breitigan was destroyed shortly after the shooting. If the gun no longer exists, its absence from evidence doesn't mean Fernandez never had it. That's also why investigators didn't search the home of Jimmy Jones, where the blue Ford F-150 linked to the murder was eventually found. The gun, prosecutors say, was already gone. The murder weapon has never been recovered. Neither side disputes that. The second pillar of the prosecution's case is money. Johns took the stand again on day six, focused on Fernandez's finances. The testimony centered on three checks written from Fernandez's business, First Choice Home Rentals, LLC, to Henry Tenen, all dated after Breitigan was killed on February 16th, March 28th to 22, $2,000. Memo line reads, landscaping and clearing. Same day, $3,000. Memo reads, keeping up with the roof. April 4th, $5,000. Memo reads, Kickstarter, good luck. $10,000 total. The check stubs were recovered from inside the blue Ford F-150 that investigators say carried the gunman to the scene. Tenant's typical weekly check from Fernandez ran $300 to $365 for handyman work. Before March of 2022, his bank account averaged more than $170 in the negative. After the three deposits, his balance jumped above $9,000. No invoices from Tenen for any of the described work were ever found. The defense challenged all of it. Dreischer showed the jury that in the 3 months before the homicide, Fernandez's financial record shows zero payments to Tenen, not a single check, not a single transfer. For a prosecution alleging Fernandez hired a man to commit murder, there's no evidence he paid anything before the murder happened. Checks came after. Dreischer arguing the timing is consistent with bulk payments for legitimate work Tenen had already performed on Fernandez properties. Johns walked the jury through the Gardner family trust, Shannon Gardner's parents, the owners of Stampin' Up, a craft supply company, created an irrevocable trust for their daughter in 2019. They made Fernandez the trustee, giving him administrative and financial control. That seems like a wise move. The trust contained a clause. Shanna could resume control of the money when she had no further legal entanglements with her ex-husband, Jared Breitigan. That language sat in the document from 2019 until February 16th of 22, when the entanglements ended permanently. By April, Shanna had opened new accounts and started moving money. Prosecutors also noted two $75,000 checks from Gardner's parents, one to Shanna, one to Fernandez, written in December of 21, 2 months before the killing. But the defense landed a counter that matters. Dreischer got Johns to admit on the stand that after Fernandez and Gardner separated, Fernandez didn't get richer, he got poorer. Shanna ended up with more money because she gained direct access to the trust. If the murder was supposed to make Fernandez wealthier, the financial records say it didn't. Before the jury entered the courtroom on day six, the prosecution made one more attempt to get something closer to direct evidence in front of the panel. Kim Jensen, a friend of Shanna Gardner's, had been subpoenaed and given an immunity deal. She testified outside the jury's presence. Jensen recalled Gardner telling her that Fernandez had eyes everywhere and that there had been missed opportunities with regard to Jared Breitigan. Jensen recalled Gardner saying Fernandez asked if there was anything he wanted her to take care of in reference to Jared. Gardner's alleged response, according to Jensen, absolutely not. Fernandez's attorneys objected. Those were communications between husband and wife, relayed through a friend, protected by marital privilege. Judge Kite reviewed the text messages between Jensen and Garner and found roughly 45% could potentially be admitted. But the statements about what Fernandez allegedly asked his wife to do, the closest thing in 6 days of testimony to evidence of intent, those are blocked. The jury never heard Kim Jensen. The court's timeline showed her testimony ended before jurors were brought back for the next witness. The most direct account of Fernandez expressing willingness to act against Breitigan stayed outside the room where it would have mattered. The prosecution is now rested. The defense filed its motion for acquittal, and the argument that followed was the most revealing exchange of the trial. The defense laid out the charges require a communicative act between Fernandez and Tenen. No evidence of one was submitted. No witness testified to an earnest request. Even the documented payments don't prove the checks were for a killing. The memo lines say landscaping, roofing, and a Kickstarter project, and they're really relying that you believe that. A marriage to Breitigan's ex-wife standing alone is not proof of conspiracy to commit murder. The prosecution's answer stripped the case to its core. The earnest ask is not required. The prosecutor told the judge, because the killing itself is proof that the ask happened, Fernandez is the only connection between the alleged gunman and the victim. The totality, the checks, the phone data gap on the night of the murder, the trust clause, the January visit to Biggerstaff, Tenen's practice run along Breitigan's route. It forms a web. That web, the prosecution argued, is the communicative act. Judge Kite denied the defense motion. The case moves forward. After denying the motion, Judge Kite mapped out the rest of the trial with both sides. The defense expects to finish calling its witnesses on Tuesday morning. The prosecution will deliver its closing arguments then. Jury instructions, deliberations could begin Wednesday. 12 jurors will carry a circumstantial web into that room and decide whether it holds truth that Mario Fernandez Saldana was involved in the murder of Jared Breitigan. Again, what do you think? I think it could go either way, quite honestly. I believe, personally, he had a lot to do with this and should be convicted. But what I believe versus what the evidence shows, and if the jury's going to follow the evidence to the T, I mean, I'd convict. I would say there's enough, in my opinion, but I don't know I think that might be debatable for some legal experts. I'm sure I'll be talking about it in the coming weeks here on the program. Bob Mata, Eric Faddis. We'll talk. We'll discuss. We'll have some coffee. We'll figure it all out, right? Okay. Your thoughts in the comment section. Substack, YouTube. Link is right there. The QR code. Go ahead, scan it. It'll take you to either Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Pick where you want to get the podcast and do press subscribe. We're going to be following this case well into Shanna Gardner's trial, which fires up, if everything stays as planned, next week. Until next time, my name's Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.